have a shot. 30 seconds. I'm on right now. I don't believe you.
Run.
What?
You're listening to The Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
All right, we're on.
Ready, Phil.
We're on in 5, 4.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Hockey Show here on 101.5 UMFM, Canada's only campus-produced radio show that strictly talks hockey. How are you, Jason? How's everything going for you this week?
I'm pretty good. It's a short week, enjoy that while it happens.
I'm going to say right now, in terms of having a short week, somehow it always feels longer to me. I don't know why.
Just cramming a lot more work into a shorter period of time.
I was going to say, I don't know if work hates me somehow for that, but they seem to do that to me, but whatever, that's all right. I am Teebs, as you are very aware if you're out here listening. Lots of kids back on campus, as we saw today. School back in session.
Yeah, it was very noticeable just walking around, and it's not a ghost town here right now.
From both of us, welcome back, number one, to anybody who's listening out in the school area here. But secondly, hit the books, everybody. Yes. I got a good friend, Ashley, just getting into the university scene, and figuring out that got to hit the books for that. So get going,
Ash. It builds up fast. Like, you think that you have time, but it really builds, because your professors do not talk to each other.
No.
They don't even consider if they teach multiple classes and you're in multiple of those classes. They don't even consider that.
They don't even care if you come to class. Like, that's the whole thing. So, right?
That's another learning curve that a lot of recent high school graduates are going to learn very quickly is that, they don't care.
No.
You're on your own.
You're here to work, and if you're not here to work, you're in the wrong place, basically.
Yep.
So, the band you're hearing for the introduction song tonight features Canadian husband and wife duo known as Drew and Danielle McTaggart. Mm-hmm. Their band is Dear Rouge, and here behind us, which is a play on Danielle's hometown of Red Deer, Alberta.
Nice.
So that's where they got the name from. They released this song, Goon, earlier this year, which you're hearing now, on March 8th, 2024, from their newest album, Lonesome High. Dear Rouge is named as the 2016 Juno Award winner for Breakthrough Group of the Year, and they'll be playing a couple of October dates in St. Catharines and Richmond Hill, Ontario, next month, in terms of going to see them. Mm-hmm. This song, Goon, which we were just playing, which we can throw on again here if we have to, but was written about the frustration of dealing with unwanted individuals that keep resurfacing in your life. With Danielle telling CanadianBeats.ca, quote, "This is a song about the people in our lives that we just like to forget, but somehow and for some reason or another, they just keep turning up, and often in the most uncomfortable ways," unquote. Sounds like some of the people we keep mentioning on the show for all the wrong reasons, but hey, that's just how it works around here.
Exactly.
So there you go, little Goon from Dear Rouge, a great band as well, good rocking band there. So nice to have them on the show, and little Canadiana for us here to start things off tonight.
Always happy with a little Canadiana.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that at all. So there we go.
Good old CanCon.
Speaking of Canadiana, there was a pretty solemn moment in one Canadian city yesterday, anyway, in Calgary, another one across the border in Columbus, Ohio, which we're going to start with. I'm sure that this will never get to the Goodrow family, and I know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's been well wishes and good thoughts pouring in all over the place for the Goodrow family, but and their extended families as well. But our hearts here at The Hockey Show obviously go out to everybody in this time of tragedy, and both Johnny and Matthew are definitely in our thoughts during this difficult time after what happened to them. Mm-hmm. But I do want to give major kudos to both the Calgary Flames and the Columbus Blue Jackets for the ceremonies that they held yesterday in honor to honor Johnny and Matthew in their respective cities. Obviously, a lot of emotions yesterday. A lot of people that were out talking about, you know, how they knew the players and everything like that. They were moving. They were touching. And I think it spoke volumes about the fan base in both of those cities because of how many people, A, came out, and B, how many people stuck around for as long as they did. It wasn't like it was like, we're just going to show up, you know, hear a few speeches and go home. Everybody stayed. And even in Calgary where he was booed earlier, you know, he came back, like everybody in Calgary was out there to support him.
And I think it goes to show just the impact that Johnny made in both those markets, really. And who he was as a person. Like, he's the kind of guy that, you know, you can be mad that he left, but he left for very understandable reasons. I don't think anybody would blame him for, you know, he moved teams, he left Calgary. I don't think he really wanted to leave Calgary, but it was for the benefit of his family, and he wanted to be close to his family. It was an opportunity for his wife. And
word out of again, I'm not trying to put words in anybody's mouth, but word out of you know, everybody that's spoken about him now that he's gone, is that Johnny was a devoted family man. Like, he gave everything he had for his family. And when it turned out that, you know, they wanted to be closer to home and his wife got an opportunity to go work near, you know, closer to home, like, Johnny didn't say no to that for obvious reasons. And I don't fault him for that.
Family came first for him.
I respect the fact that he is able to put family above job, especially when it comes to how short some of these NHL careers are.
And I mean, it extends to his brother as well. Like, they went to Boston College together. They both chose that school so they could play together. Johnny, he could have made the jump to the AHL or the NHL much earlier than he did, but he wanted to stick out so he could play at Boston College with his brother. And no, there's no fault. Like, it was a dream that they had to play together, and he wanted to be there for his brother when he made the jump to, you know, to college hockey, and that all worked out for them. And, you know, every story that I hear about them and their families, just they are the quintessential hockey family. Like, they're who everybody, the kind of family everyone wants to have, right? Where it's, they became about as much of a fixture in Calgary and then Columbus hockey as Johnny did. And you know, the outpouring of support for families, the, you know, his parent or their parents, siblings, wives and children has been, I mean, it, you never want it to happen, and you never think it's going to happen. It's one of those things that, you know, waking up that morning, it's shock.
So we'll get to the account here in a second, but I do want to remind everybody that there still is a memorial service that will happen. It will happen on Monday at 11 a.m. Central Time. It will be live streamed on the Blue Jackets website, as Johnny and Matthew will be memorialized at Nationwide Arena. And it's only for close friends and for family. So, or I guess maybe not the arena. I guess they're going to be doing it somewhere else. But it will be live streamed on the Blue Jackets website if you want to watch it. I highly recommend it. Bring some Kleenex probably, because there will be some tears, I imagine. But should be really, really sort of moving to see Johnny and Matthew, especially after. And again, this is the part that we were having discussions today. This me and another guy at work. If you're his sister now, and again, that's why Johnny and Matthew were in New Jersey. His sister was getting married. How do you associate anything now with that anniversary other than, oh my God?
It just, like, just to think you should be waking up that morning as, this is the greatest day of my life. And you're living through a nightmare. Like, it's like everything about it was just like, it's exactly who those guys were. You know, they're out spending time together, training for the hockey season, being on their bikes, and, you know, trying to get a little bit more time in around their sister's wedding. And they were going to be groomsmen at, or I think they were being bridesmaids at the wedding, right? They were going to be with their sister.
They were, well, they were groomsmen. Apparently, they were huge fans of the guy that she was marrying. Like they are, like they thought he was like the greatest thing since sliced bread. And it's hard to go, okay, well, you guys are like pro hockey players. This guy wasn't. He's just a guy, and they're his biggest fans.
Yeah, and it's just, it's horrible, really. And so, now she has to, you know. Like take away all of like the logistics of like you've planned this entire event and all the stuff, like that's all put to the side. Just you are now being thrown into an absolute nightmare that you never thought you would ever have to deal
with. Right. So here's the reality in terms of what's going on. We're going to drop this back into reality. I mean, we can wax poetic about Johnny and Matthew all day, but here's the reality. The man driving the SUV, Sean M. Higgins, he's a 43-year-old male from Woodstown, New Jersey. He's been charged with 2 counts of vehicular homicide. I personally feel like you should never see the light of day again unless it's from a prison yard, but I don't get to make that decision. According to New Jersey police, Higgins was driving behind 2 other vehicles when he, quote, attempted to pass a slower moving sedan and SUV, unquote. After passing the sedan via the southbound lanes of travel while going north.
Mm-hmm.
So he went into oncoming traffic. Again, you're allowed to do that if it's single lane. Higgins, quote, attempted to re-enter the northbound lanes of travel when the SUV in front of Higgins moved to the middle of the roadway to safely pass 2 bicyclists. That would be Johnny and Matthew.
Yep.
Traveling north on the right side of the roadway. So the SUV, trying to avoid the 2 guys on bikes, moved over to the middle of the road, which caused this guy problems now because he's trying to get back into the lane.
Yep.
When Higgins attempted to pass the SUV on the right.
Yeah, because he wasn't just trying to re-enter the lane and like filter back in. He was trying to zigzag around to get in front of the other vehicle that was in his way.
He struck Johnny and Matthew in the rear of the bikes and caused them to sustain fatal injuries from the accident. Both counts of vehicular homicide can be punishable by a maximum of 10 years in state prison. There still is an investigation ongoing as to whether or not Higgins may have been impaired at the time of the collision. Again, police are going to continue looking into that. From my point of view, if anybody is out there and they get behind the wheel of while impaired, just pray you're pulled over because it may save multiple, if not one life, multiple lives that night.
Like, call an Uber.
I mean, there's so many options.
Walk. Like
and again, I'm not saying that Higgins was impaired. We have no proof of that yet. But if he was,
yes,
that's a choice that he made, and that choice comes with severe penalties.
Just still, like, even if he was sober, just
the driving,
exactly the erratic drive. Like, do you really need to get home that like a few seconds quicker? You need to zigzag through traffic going into the oncoming lane and riding the shoulder to get around a car that's moving a little bit too slow for you? Like, give your head a shake.
I mean,
who are you?
I have no...
It's a completely avoidable tragedy.
So that's what happened in the bigger picture in terms of what's going on. Again, investigations will continue. This guy's going to probably going to court. Reading a couple of accounts, he'll probably be granted bail if he can afford it, which is part of the U.S. justice system. You can't fight that. But at the end of the day, they're figuring that he's probably going to be, like, again, the best advice you could get from an attorney at this point is just to plead guilty.
Yes.
Don't try and get out of this. Don't try and argue your way out of this. Just plead guilty.
Yes, just take... You made this mistake with fatal consequences. You have to deal with it. And people were sharing the video, like, of him, the court, like, the arraignment hearing.
Right, and I get that.
And his reaction. We don't know if that was before or after he found out what had happened.
Well, it was after he was being told what his charges were. But again, the investigation or the problem was that the long weekend landed in there, and they require 72 hours holding for any sort of accident like that to do the blood tests and do the impairment and all the testing, come back and all that kind of stuff or whatever, right? So he was freaking out because he's like, why do I have to stay in prison until next Thursday?
Mm-hmm.
And the judge was explaining, well, it's because of the long weekend and we require the 72 hours, which means that you have to stay over the long weekend. And that's what he was freaking out about, because he's like, well, I should just be able to do my 3 days and go home. And she was like, yeah, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can understand why I don't understand why you're freaking out. Like, show a little remorse here, pal.
Yes.
But at the end of the day, though, if you don't understand the 3-day rule, it's 3 business days, not 3 days.
Yes. Like, figure it out.
So
it's called a holiday.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
a thing that you are not going to be able to enjoy for a while.
The good news that came out of this, again, not that there's a lot of good news, and I mean, again, we are definitely, you know, hoping that the Goodrow family can find peace one day mm-hmm. with what's gone on. But Cole Caulfield wrote an exceptionally nice thing about mm-hmm. about Johnny Hockey, about Johnny Goodrow. He played with Johnny at the IIHF World Championship on Team USA. He was his hero growing up. Johnny Goodrow was Cole Caulfield's hero growing up. Cole Caulfield will switch his number from 22 to 13 next year in honor of mm-hmm. Johnny Goodrow. I can't say enough good things about Cole Caulfield for doing this. He doesn't have to. Nobody says he should have changed his number. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of Montreal jerseys out there now. They're going to have the 22s rather than the 13s on there. But at the end of yep. the day, though, Cole's shown his mm-hmm. his stripes here by saying, I'm going to honor my friend.
And like,
I'm going to honor the guy that I grew up idolizing.
Yeah, and I think we can't talk about the legacy of Johnny Goodrow, and it breaks my heart that we have to say the legacy of Johnny Goodrow now, but the fact that we would not have a Cole Caulfield without a Johnny Goodrow.
Yeah.
He paved the way for guys like that to make the NHL. Like, we often forget how hard it was for a guy like Marty St. Louis to make it to the NHL and prove that he could hang. And Johnny Goodrow was the same way. This is a guy that, like,
You wonder if a Johnny Goodrow, and again, we'll never know the answer now, unless it's written somewhere in the archives of the internet, but you wonder if a Johnny Goodrow found the wherewithal, found the strength to play college hockey because of Paul Kariya. Again, another yeah. smaller guy, another, you know, highly skilled, highly, mm-hmm. you know, very shifty guy in terms of being on the skate. But you kind of look at these guys that come out of college hockey that have these skills. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I mean, the Marty St. Louis is another example of things that you just kind of go, there's room for these guys in the game, and they should yep. probably be celebrated when they make it.
But it's like, you know, the stories that were coming out of, you know, his first training camp with the Calgary Flames before he had, like, you know, become a household name. He showed up to the rink and the security guard didn't believe him
yeah.
that he was a hockey player because he was so small. He looked like a literal child walking up. And it took a while for them to, like, call up and be like, is this guy, like, legit, or is he just some crazy kid that's shown up trying right. to get on the ice? And no, he was there. And just the Flames management at the time, you know, not even, like, taking a flyer, like, this kid, the supremely talented kid, landed in their lap, more or less.
Yeah.
And they knew what they had, seeing him in the USHL, and again, he was one of the guys that paved the way for the USHL to become a much larger factor in terms of hockey development and prospects and player development and scouting. They noticed what they had, the potential he had in the USHL, and they spent a fourth round pick to grab him. And watching him, they knew that they had something.
Well, and I mean, it's not hard to see. I mean, again, I've watched enough highlights over the last mm-hmm. week of Johnny Goodrow that, I mean, it's not hard to see that the kid had talent all over the
yeah,
place.
And heart.
I mean, didn't let anything stop him, didn't let anybody slow him down either. Like, he fought through a lot of battles, fought through a lot of checks mm-hmm. that were much bigger, much stronger than him,
yep.
and ended up, you know, on the right side of the puck, and you just kind of go, yeah, you got to find more of these guys that's just got that, mm-hmm. that unending, unrelenting motor in them that yep. doesn't let them stop. So
yeah, he would carve through teams, like, immense hockey IQ. Like the I can't remember where what live stream I saw it on, but his first NHL goal is like you watch it back and I'm like, that's a vintage Johnny Hockey goal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Like it looked. You know, you can sit there and look and be like, oh, it's lucky. Like, you got his stick in the right spot. It banked off of him, whatever. But then, like, you see more of Johnny Goodrow, and you're like, oh, no, he knew what he was doing there. He knew he knew the exact position. He's the kind of guy, you know, we talk a lot about on the Bison's broadcast about guys that can disappear in a play. That not like, oh, they're not a factor. They just slip away into the background and you don't notice they're gone until they are putting the puck in the back of the net, and that's Johnny Gaudreau.
But doesn't that describe Cole Caulfield to a T?
Exactly.
Just legitimately has a stick in the right position or disappears, and then all of a sudden his arms are above his head because he scored a goal, and you're like, where'd he come from?
Exactly.
So kind of nice to see that, but obviously a terrible time. We're hoping that the Gaudreaus can find some peace as we move on from that story. Obviously terrible. We'll go up the highway, though, because I don't know if Stan Bowman realizes he's falling into Stan Bowman territory again, but...
You mean Stan Bowman is being Stan Bowman?
Stan Bowman might be Stan Bowman here. Leon Draisaitl signed an 8-year, $112 million contract with the Edmonton Oilers on Tuesday that has an average annual value of $14 million per season. Let's let that sink in for a second. $14 million per season for
a lot of money.
The number three pick in 2014 will have earned $180 million over his last two contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Over 16 years, he signed an 8-year deal prior to this. He signed another 8-year deal now. $180 million over 16 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dude's averaging like $12 million a season.
Yeah, that's incredible.
With the Oilers, and this new contract will finish in 2033. Mm-hmm. His deal carries the largest average annual value in NHL history, with much of the new salary being based on the $100 million in bonus cash payments,
mm-hmm.
which means he's getting all that money paid before the season even starts.
Yep.
That's ridiculous. There is some good news, though, if you're an Oilers fan, because, I mean, again, since 2018-2019, Draisaitl ranked second in the NHL in points behind teammate Connor McDavid. He has 643, McDavid has 726. He's second in goals. He has 272 behind Austin Matthews, 294. So, guy's holding up his end of the bargain, at least, in terms of scoring points. Since entering the NHL, Draisaitl is third in points behind McDavid and Nikita Kucherov of the Tampa Bay Lightning. He has blah, 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 blah. Oh, it doesn't actually say on here in terms of where I must have missed that stat in here. He's second in power play goals, though, behind Alex Ovechkin of the Washington Capitals. So, again, guy is mm-hmm. churning out stats. He's worth some money.
Yeah. It's funny to remember when he was drafted. People were like, they're taking a German guy?
Third overall?
What are you doing?
Guy's worth some money. But, again, I have a hard time with this, and I'll say this up front, because... Earlier this summer, Draisaitl was on record as saying he'll take less to play in Edmonton in order to keep the group together, to keep the guys together. Mm-hmm. Wants to go on another Stanley Cup run, wants to actually try and bring the trophy home this time.
And they were already pinching pennies to keep that team together, and they lost guys to do it.
Broberg gone, Holloway gone.
CeCe was traded out.
Right, we're still looking for guys to fill in goaltending. We have in terms of Skinner having a good tandem partner. Again, lots of question marks still, but... Here's where things got crazy, because Andy Scott of Octagon Hockey, he's one of the big Octagon Hockey guys, told the Ottawa Citizen, quote, he understood that he needed to take less than what we consider to be his market value in order to make that happen, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
He took less?
Then what's his market value?
What did the Oilers offer him then? He took less?
I think...
I don't think he took anything less. I think the Oilers offered him $112 million, and he signed it.
Yes, I think that's exactly what... I think Stan Bowman did the Stan Bowman thing.
Right.
And I think... I honestly think...
Andy Scott is full of crap.
I think Draisaitl probably went in there expecting to be like, all right, this is what I want, and you're going to come down from it, right? And they said, no, that's good. $14 million.
Here's where things get crazy, though, because on July 29th, quote, he reportedly, wasn't looking for an Austin Matthews type of deal, unquote. Now, this must just mean in length, because Matthews signed a 4-year, $53 million extension last season that has an average value of $13.25 million a season.
Yeah. He's definitely talking about length, because the whole like short-term burst deal, you get a lot of money up front, and then you can sign a new contract later and take advantage of the cap going up.
So conservatively, you just mentioned the cap going up. Conservatively, you say the cap goes up $5 million next season to $93 million, okay?
Yep.
Say it goes up $5 million. Draisaitl will be occupying 15.1% of Edmonton's cap space on his own.
Mm-hmm.
Connor McDavid needs to sign a deal in 2026 as an extension.
Yes.
$18 million, $20 million on average. What would you say? Like, I'll just throw a number out there.
Max.
I'll just throw a number out there.
Whatever he wants.
Say he gets $18 million a season. Say he gets four more than Draisaitl. If that's the case, then these two men could eat up more than one-third of Edmonton's total cap by 2027. That's Kane and Taves all over again.
Kane and Taves, it's the core four in Toronto all over again.
Like, this is madness.
But you only get two guys. Like, you...
I mean, granted, those two guys are pretty darn good.
Yeah, but Kane and Taves were at the time...
There isn't a Marner on that.
When Kane and Taves signed those contracts, they were three-time Stanley Cup champions.
But that's the thing. Toronto's turning around now going, well, Marner needs an extension next season. How do we compare to Draisaitl? And I'm going, you don't. Stop comparing them.
Stop doing that.
Yeah.
Like, they signed this contract. Like, they signed Draisaitl because they knew that it was a step toward ensuring that Connor McDavid does sign with them. But then they're recreating the same problem in Toronto, where they had to sign those three guys, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews, to keep each other happy.
But he went from $8 million a season to $14 million a season. He nearly doubled his salary, his annual salary. For what? He's not scoring 200 points. He's only scoring 100 points.
Yeah, but you're pinching pennies like crazy
right
now to make the cap work so you can put a team on the ice. Like, you're at the point now where you're like two injuries away from not being able to dress a full lineup.
I'm at the point...
You're probably one injury away from not being unable to... You're going to be operating with a razor-thin margin the entire year, and you're going to have significant holes in your roster. The Oilers are not making it back to the Cup final.
Hold on. He still gets $8 million next season. It's the following season where it kicks in.
Yeah.
So, again, if you're assuming that again, the cap goes up to, say, again, I'll throw out a round number, say $100 million. He's still occupying 14% of your salary in 2 years. And we haven't even talked about Connor McDavid's new deal yet. Like, if Connor McDavid gets $20 million, those two alone occupy 34% of your salary.
Yep.
What are you doing?
Like, this is not to say, like, oh, it's bad that he got paid. Like, the dude went out and got his money. And, like, this is entirely on Stan Bowman to be like, hey, buddy, negotiate.
But that's the same thing, though. I don't think there's any sort of understanding of that the negotiation isn't an insult to the player. It's us trying to be competitive within our league.
Yeah, you go to him with a $10 million offer and say, like, hey, this is what we can give you. Or you start at $9 million. You say, like, $1 million extra. That's where we're starting from. You're starting from up here. We're going to meet in the middle, maybe like $10, $11 million. That gives us wiggle room to when the cap goes up to bring more guys in that
but
potentially...
if you're willing to take less, my question is, what do you think the market value is for Draisaitl? Because that's the question. Because if his market value, say, again, I'll throw out a number, if his market value, say, was $18 million, say that's what Octagon Hockey thought he was worth, then Connor McDavid has to be worth $25 million on his own market value.
Well, I think no matter what, Connor McDavid is undervalued. Like, you can't...
Well, I mean, yeah, but at the same
time, you need to get to, like, just Joe Sakic levels, like, pre-cap Joe Sakic levels to be like, all right, that's worth it.
Right, but at the same time, though, you have to put 18 other guys on the ice. It can't just be Connor McDavid and Draisaitl out there.
Yeah. That's the thing. We're in a cap world. Like, to me, when these contracts get signed... It stinks to me of these are Canadian markets that are terrified of losing good players, and they're all operating with this mentality that nobody wants a job in the NHL if it's with X team.
Okay, but okay, so Vegas wins with castoffs, Florida wins with castoffs, and they have cap space to spare. I mean, Vegas doesn't, but that's because they spend ridiculously during the summer, but whatever. But at the end of the day, though, they're all cast-offs when they win. And I don't understand why more teams aren't looking around going, there's lots of good young players out there. Yeah, they're not McDavid, they're not Draisaitl. We get that. They're not going to score 200 points together in one season. But they can score us a pile of goals and a pile, and we'll get them for one quarter, one eighth, one tenth of the price.
Because you've got GMs that have been working in the NHL for 30 years. That are making these decisions, they still think that it's, you know...
I get it. I know what you're saying.
But where they've got pennies to give out to guys, and everyone's trying to leave and go to somewhere else. And, like, they're operating with a loser mentality is what they're operating with. You go in there, regardless of team... Like, Columbus can say this, Buffalo can say this, Winnipeg can say this, any team in the NHL can say this. Hey, buddy... We're an NHL franchise that can give you millions of, like, life-changing money... Do you want to play in the National Hockey League or not?
Well, yes, but I don't want to play for you.
then leave. Go but find another
but
job.
But that's the thing, though. And again, that goes back to Rucker and McGroarty. Like, exactly. If you don't want to be here, then don't be here.
Yeah, go to another team then.
We'll send you some other place if you don't want to be here. Just don't complain when things don't go your way.
Yeah.
Like, don't look at us and go, oh, I should have stayed. Too bad.
Yeah, too bad, so sad.
Sorry, Andrew Kopp.
Yeah.
But it's funny you bring up pennies, because here's where pennies are going to come into play. And again, we just talked about one of the most insane contracts that has been handed out. Here's one of the most insane contracts that's ever been calculated. And I'll say because
this gives me a headache.
This is legitimately going to drive people up the wall, because this is economics 101 right here. So get ready, folks. A lot of math, a lot of numbers coming at you. Seth Jarvis, Winnipegger Seth Jarvis, signed an 8-year, $63.2 million deal with the Carolina Hurricanes. Okay? Averages out to being about $7.9 million per season. Jarvis's contract will include a total of $29.24 million in signing bonuses paid in years 1, 2, 3, 7, and 8.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So 5 of the 8 years, there's a signing bonus. First 3, last 2. But it's how these payments are structured that's going to drive... Well, it drives me up the wall. It might drive you up the wall as well.
Yep.
Year 1 signing bonus of $8.95 million, year 2 signing bonus of $4.95 million, and year 7 signing bonus of $5.77 million will all be paid on July 1st, 2032. That's the day after the contract expires.
Yes.
On that day, 30-year-old Seth Jarvis will receive a check for $19.47 million in real money.
Mm-hmm.
But here's how the Hurricanes have beaten the system. And I'll say this because it's going to drive you mad once you hear it. Because a dollar today is worth more than a dollar tomorrow, based on economic forecasts. Those 3 bonuses are discounted to their present values by the NHL for the salary cap purpose.
Yep.
Basically, that'll drop the total cap charge by almost $4 million to $15.67 million, which is crazy because... Basically, again, the NHL is basically saying the money you're going to get in 2032 isn't going to be as good as it is today, basically.
Yep.
It's still real money. You're still going to get 19, but for our purposes right now, because of the economic forecast, it's going to be worth less.
Yeah, because they're essentially saying it's like inflation, right? Every year,
your dollar buys a little bit less.
Exactly. Your purchasing power goes down. So by the end of that contract, the value in terms of what they're projecting, the percentage of the cap, that should tell you like what they're thinking 8 years from now, what the cap is going to be. It's going to be every dollar is going to be worth 6 cents less just because the cap goes up and that contract is worth less of the cap. And
so,
you know,
so Jarvis
changes things.
So Jarvis will receive the full $63.2 million that he signed for.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to be paid out atypically from what we normally see.
Yep.
It also then will drop the present value of the contract from $63.2 million to $59.36 million when it's all said and done because of how that salary is deferred.
Yes, because in the life of the contract, he's not getting paid the full amount.
As a result, the Hurricanes will absorb a cap hit of $7.42 million over each of the 8 years instead of the full $7.9 million annually that was scheduled.
So they're saving like $500,000?
Basically $500,000 per year. That lower number in Carolina will allow them to get below the salary cap for next season by $79,913.
They are on a razor thin margin there.
And here's where things get even crazier. According to Frank Saravelli, both the NHL Century Registry and NHL Players Association were briefed in advance on the structure of Jarvis's contract, and both gave their stamp of approval on this contract structure. Beyond that, Carolina tested this idea with Jacob Slavin.
And nobody noticed.
Jacob Slavin. He signed an 8-year deal worth $51.69 million for a cap hit of $6.46 million, but year 7 signing bonus he gets in year 7, was deferred until the day after his contract expires on July 1st, 2033, and is discounted to its present value of $4.55 million, bringing the value of the contract down to $51.17 million and a cap hit of $6.39 million. Now, again, that's only a difference of people are going to go, oh, it's only $7,000 basically in terms of, or $70,000 per year or whatever that you're right. But Carolina tested it. Nobody saw it. Nobody picked up on it. Nobody said a word about it. And then they did it again.
Yes. So now they have precedents to say, hey, you can't turn this one down because you allowed this one.
Is this not the same kind of crap that we've seen from teams pull, like the LTIR garbage with Vegas and the Devils and the Kovalchuk contract, mm-hmm. the 15-year Kovalchuk contract? Is this not the same garbage we're seeing now,
yep.
where people are looking at the salary cap and going, how can I bend these rules to really make myself more competitive and screw everybody else?
It's not about the spirit of the rules, but the letter of the rule.
Right.
They found a loophole that they can exploit to make it easier for them. Like, and people are going to say, like, oh, it's $500,000. Like, is that really going to make a difference? It does make a difference.
Well, clearly it does, because now they're under the cap for with both Slavin and Jarvis in the lineup.
Exactly. You add up, you know, if you do this for an entire NHL team, you're shaving off like millions of dollars. You know, if you do this with five players, you've got $2.5 million. In extra cap space that you wouldn't have had otherwise, and you can go sign a new player for that.
But okay,
and it's creative accounting, and it's Eric Tulsky being Eric Tulsky and playing the game the way that he knows how to play the game. But it's also really putting weird precedent into how the CBA is managed, how contracts are signed.
I mean, I'll give nothing away on the Slavin deal because, again, they just tested it on that one. But the fact that they pushed it so far with the Jarvis deal now, just to get him under contract so that nobody else could sign him, is maddening to the point of being stupid. Because how on earth do you tell a kid who's not under contract, by the way, here's $20 million, sign with us again? Is that not just influencing where his decision comes from for the next contract?
I don't think the NHL. I think the NHL would see this. They promised him that money. He's getting that money.
Oh, and I'm not denying that. He signed for that, and then he agreed to defer the payment. I'm not denying that there was an agreement put in place. But does Jacob Slavin in 2033, does Seth Jarvis in 2032 go, you know what, I'll hang around the Carolina just because they're going to give me $20 million today?
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind signing for another deal. You guys treated me well.
Yeah.
$20 million treats anybody well.
Yeah. I'm worried about the fact that, you know, These GMs, like, you give them an inch, they'll take a mile. We've seen that with the LTIR thing. We're going to see more teams doing this deferment stuff. Like, it's not the same way that, like, the Shohei Ohtani deferment works, where, like, they're literally doing that to avoid taxes.
Right, which makes sense.
This is stretching and twisting and opening up really weird holes in how the contract language and structures are working in the NHL. Because you know that there's going to be a team who signs a deal like that and says, hey, there's going to be one really evil GM out there or owner out there that's going to say, hey, that guy's not under contract, I'm not paying this payout.
Or the opposite could happen in that, if you got a guy that you want to keep and certainly don't want to pay a ton of money out to in terms of bringing him on board, you can have that signing signing bonus while your cap is sort of in flux for the first couple of years. You can move all that money to the back end and go, you know what, we'll pay all that at the end as long as it all works out in terms of the math.
Yep. Yeah, right now you're getting like league min.
And you know what? We'll move it 30 years down the road so that we can amortize it even further.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Like, is there going to be a team that argues that, hey, this payment came on the next calendar year for the NHL, so you should actually, instead of amortizing the contract over 8 years, it should be amortized over 9 years.
Which then, again, spreads out that salary cap to being a much lower number.
Exactly.
Like the guys,
and then the PA's like, well, he's still getting his money, so...
See, and it wouldn't even be a 9-year contract, because the 8-year contract would still be in place. But what would happen, though, is that because the value of that money on that bonus would be worth 1 year less in terms of the formula that the NHL has for calculating the value of that money, it would be 1 year one year additional to that, which means it would be worth less.
Yep.
Not
so you
worth
amortize
less,
it,
but worth less.
Yeah. So you amortize it over 9 years,
right,
and then you also undercut the value.
Well, you can't amortize it over 9 years because the agreement for the contract is still eight years.
What I'm saying is, like, there's going to be a team that tries to make that argument.
Oh, I'm sure there will be, but this is what I mean. Like, you're opening the door to all sorts of interpretations now.
Exactly.
Then it doesn't matter what goes on
anymore. Then we get into weird loopholes about, like, oh, well, he got paid in this year, so maybe the contract should actually be 9 years, and he's still being paid by the team.
That goes back to the Kovalchuk contract, though, where Kovalchuk signed for 15 years so that nobody else could sign him in the NHL.
Yep.
You were going to leave anyway. We knew you were going to leave after a couple of years. We'll front-load this contract, and then you can't come back to the NHL unless you come play for us.
Yep.
Well, that's going to happen with a bunch of these guys now, because if you're still technically being paid, are you under contract? How does that work?
Yeah, you need to ask a lawyer, because this is going to be
And see, this
could go really poorly.
But this falls into the Bobby Bonilla situation, where Bobby Bonilla gets a payment from the Mets for the next 30 years. Same thing with DiPietro. DiPietro got paid by the Islanders forever in terms of getting that money, because it was paid out based on the buyout schedule. But you could essentially defer payments for as long as you wanted, as long as the player agrees to it.
Yep.
Like, this doesn't make any sense in terms of the letter of the salary cap laws in the CBA should have made this very clear, that you must start and finish payments within that contract. A year or time, whatever.
And the other thing is, there are going to be, like, Seth Jarvis is literally, he's taking this risk right now, and Slavin is doing it as well. There is a risk, and I'm not saying this will happen to the Carolina Hurricanes or Tom Dundon or whatever. There is a possibility, however small, that the Hurricanes go under between now and when that payment happens. And all that money he should have made over however many years is gone.
But how do you... So, again, and I'll only ask this because I'm a jerk about this, but how do you convince the insurance company to LTIR this if a guy gets hurt? Like, that's... there are so many questions that need to be answered here that aren't being answered, because we don't know any of the salary information. I mean, we know the salary information, but we don't know any of the breakdowns of how things are getting passed anymore, because nobody's allowed to question the NHL on this.
Yep. Yeah, the insurance companies are probably going to be looking at this like, are you did what now?
You gave him a $20 million payout when he's not under contract? Why are we paying for this?
Yes, exactly. Because we only insure contracts for the length of the contract.
Valid contracts, right.
If he's LTIR'd, if he gets bought out or whatever. Also, what happens to the buyout then? If he gets bought out...
Again, that's the question, right? The deferral payment on that is going to be insane, because he hasn't been paid any of his bonuses.
Good Lord.
It doesn't make any sense.
Like, the NHL just shot themselves... not just in the foot, like right through the thigh with this one.
But again, you have to understand that the NHL is following the rules of the CBA. The NHLPA signed off on it as well. They're following the rules of the CBA. But nobody's asking, yeah, but what about? Like, what happens if? And nobody's looking at that going, well, you know, that we should have really looked at that when the CBA was signed. Yeah, but at the time of the CBA, nobody was negotiating that stuff, because we were taking it at face value. We were taking the spirit of the rule as to mean something.
Yep.
Since the NHL and the NHLPA have allowed this monstrosity of the salary cap rules to be almost arbitrary, it's only getting worse.
Yep.
I don't know. I don't understand. Anyway, good on Seth Jarvis for getting money that he deserved, I guess, because it won't be paid out until he's almost retired. So good for him. A couple quick stories as we get through some of the smaller stuff today. From the It Had to Happen file, we saw a lot of PWHL games last season that were played at or near capacity in Canada. It seems that two teams have made arrangements already to move into larger facilities for season two. Mm-hmm. PWHL Toronto has announced that the Coca-Cola Coliseum will serve as the team's primary home venue for regular season games in the 24-25 campaign. The home of the AHL Marlies, AHL Toronto Marlies, seats 8,100 for hockey. Mm-hmm. So they'll be just behind the 9,500 seat TD Center in Ottawa when it comes to capacity, much larger than the 2,500 they had in Mattamy. PWHL Montreal then got on the bigger rink ideas. They announced that Place Belle will serve as the team's primary home venue for regular season games.
Nice.
The home of the AHL Laval Rocket seats 10,062 fans for hockey. So the three Canadian teams are all looking at crowds of 8,000 plus this season if they can get near, at or near capacity, which will be pretty cool.
Awesome.
Names and logos still haven't been released, but according to John Shipley of the Pioneer Press in St. Paul, Minnesota, quote, or I guess not quote, but the league will, quote, shift to this season to nicknames and mascots, unquote, which we kind of already knew.
Mm-hmm.
Those team names and logos and mascots and everything will be coming out very soon. You may recall that the original trademark names, again, hold your dinner down if you're eating dinner on this because these are awful.
Yep.
The Boston Wicked, Montreal Echo, the New York Sound, the Minnesota Superior, the Ottawa Alert, and the Toronto Torch. All of those were pretty much absolutely roasted online by,
yes,
by through social media by fans both of the game and not of the game, so
deservedly so.
They're pretty awful. Well, that very soon part may be in 4 days on September 9th, as each PWHL team today posted a social media tease. Mm-hmm. They included Montreal posting, quote, "Something is calling," which kind of sounds like an echo. Mm-hmm. New York posting, quote, "Turning up the volume," unquote, which kind of sounds like sound.
Yep.
Minnesota, which posted, quote, "A cold front is rolling in," unquote. I don't know.
So that does not sound like Superior.
No, but it could be something chill, blizzardy, squall, anything like that.
Whitecappy.
Ottawa, white caps. Ottawa posting, quote, bringing the energy," unquote.
That sounds like you have a lot of energy when you're alert. So and you're pretty alert when you have a lot of energy.
I'm not sure what that would be like. Is the Ottawa Lightning like what kind of energy are we bringing?
Yeah,
the Ottawa Isotopes.
That'd be good.
I mean, let's just, what are we trying to bring here?
I feel like they're going to go
Toronto
with alert on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll go something normal. But Toronto's was, quote, "Almost ready to rule the rink," unquote.
If they do Queens, I quit.
We were talking about this before the show. I think rain would work really well. Toronto rain.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a ripoff of the Ontario rain in the AHL. But I mean, at the same time, though, it kind of
cool.
But
like, you got, you know, Monarchs, Royals.
I know, they need to get off that, but maybe it's something different altogether. Maybe it's like, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's like
Sovereign.
Ooh.
The Toronto Sovereign.
That's another terrible name that you could throw into the mix there. I mean, it's a good name, but it's not, I wouldn't use it for a hockey
team. The Toronto Crowns.
And then Boston didn't bother to report to post there. So,
well, so, yeah, it says something is coming.
Right, yeah. Like, what? Is that the Wicked?
I mean, something wicked this way comes.
Anyway, PWHL will see each team play 30 regular season games this season, which will include more neutral site games. It's one thing they've dedicated themselves to this season. But there hasn't been a start date for the second season that has been set yet.
Yeah, that's weird.
And again, I can understand if you're changing venues and looking for home games and stuff like that. I can understand why they're made one. But you would think they would have a start date for the actual season to start. Like, we're going to start on this date.
Yeah.
We don't know who's playing that night yet, but this is the date.
Yeah. Even if it's nobody's playing, just like give a date that,
right,
like the season officially starts.
So, more turmoil from PWHL. Not turmoil, I guess, but more just confusion.
Like
from
PWHL. The NHL season effectively starts on July 1st. That's when the calendar ticks over for the next year of the NHL.
Well, we know that it starts October 1st is usually like, okay, regular season starts like this week.
Exactly.
Like, give us an idea, right? So we'll see what happens at that point. But we talked a little bit about a couple weeks ago about the bids for the 2026 Memorial Cup, which is coming out to the WHL. Two more teams have got their names in. The 5-time WHL champion and 2-time Memorial Cup champion, Medicine Hat Tigers, are in the mix.
Nice.
They made their announcement on July 31st in an effort to host the Memorial Cup tournament. They missed the playoffs only twice since winning the Memorial Cup in 2004. However, they've only advanced past the second round of the WHL playoffs 4 times in the last 20 years.
Mm.
So, hey, congratulations. You've been in the playoffs. You just haven't done very much in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They've never hosted a Memorial Cup before. They do have Gavin McKenna, though. I should note that.
That's
2026 draft eligible Gavin McKenna, might I add, as well. So that could be a big draw going for Medicine Hat.
Yeah.
The City of Medicine Hat is backing the Tigers in their bid to the tune of $1.25 million in cash and $655,000 through in-kind services, transportation, all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
They were one of the cities that hosted the 2019 World Under 17 Hockey Challenge, so volunteer power doesn't look like it's going to be a problem. Tigers Arena Co-op Place is a 7,100 seat venue that opened in 2015. So a little bit older, but still very usable in terms of what they're looking for.
It's still a modern rink, like only 9 years ago.
The big city, the biggest city of the five that entered the fray is Spokane, Washington. The Spokane Chiefs made their announcement on July 30th. They're looking to host the Memorial Cup for the second time after doing so in 1998. The Chiefs are two-time Memorial Cup champions as well. They won in 91 and 2008. They have the support of Spokane County, the Spokane Public Facilities District, and the city of Spokane in their quest to host the tournament. But there hasn't been any financial commitments or pledging of funds of any kind yet. So I don't know what kind of support they're getting other than, hey, go get it, guys.
Yeah.
Spokane Veterans Memorial Arena, which is run by the Spokane Public Facilities District, was opened in 1995, so it's one of the older facilities in WHL. It does seat 10,366 for hockey, but that public facilities district has gone all out in terms of making sure it stays modern. It has a state-of-the-art audio and video system, plus a 350-degree color LED ribbon board.
Nice.
How many other WHL arenas have that?
Very few.
Right, exactly. That's crazy. So if you're the Memorial Cup, if you're the CHL and you're looking for technology, that is one place where you'll find it. That is impressive in terms of Spokane. So as it stands right now, Medicine Hat, Spokane, Kelowna, Lethbridge, and Brandon are the five teams that are going to be the potential hosts. We will know in November once the CHL makes a decision.
Awesome.
For those that didn't know, apparently the Ottawa Senators are sponsoring golfers now, for those that didn't hear. Announced on Wednesday, they reached a multi-year partnership agreement with LPGA Tour member Brooke Henderson, who hails from Smith Falls, Ontario. The club's logo will be featured on her towels and water bottles, plus she'll wear the Senators' colors one day at tournament with her sister Brittany, who serves as her caddy. Henderson is a former hockey player and a current Senators fan. She said, quote, "I'm super excited to team up and partner with the Senators. Such a cool opportunity. Growing up, I played hockey. I watched hockey. I always cheered for the Senators, so it feels like a perfect fit. I'm very proud to do it and show everybody who I'm cheering for and where my love is." As we know, the 26-year-old has won 13 LPGA Tour events. She's also represented Canada at the recent Paris Olympics. Ottawa Senators president and CEO Cyril Leader might have made the biggest faux pas ever, but whatever. We can laugh at this in a second. Yep. But he said, quote, "She's always been an Ottawa fan. Our values align really well with her. She's a quintessential Canadian athlete. She happens to be female, which is important because we're going to have a Women in Sport night this year."
She happens to be female. What a weird way to phrase that. She's an Ottawa Senators fan. She happens to be female, so that's pretty cool, right, guys?
Ironically, that woman happens to be female.
That LPGA athlete is a woman.
Congratulations.
That female Olympian happens to be a woman.
Cyril Leader. Nice work there, Cyril. Senators president and CEO.
Senators PR has not gotten better.
Somebody better plan out these quotes for people a little
bit
better.
Just give them a script next time.
Anyway, fun story that we're going to end off with today. This is a goofy one that Jason brought this to my attention. I saw the story and I didn't really think twice about it because I was like, this is dumb. It's not going to work. And apparently it did. For those that might, Monday was a holiday, as we know, Labor Day.
Yes.
Not a lot of people watching hockey news maybe on that day because it's the last day of sort of quote unquote last day of summer for people that are trying to get away, people come before they come back to school. But on Monday, news surfaced out of Sweden that the Modo Hockey Club, Modo, very famous, very, it's been around forever, were looking to sign defenseman Mattias Norlander. Norlander had been, is a 24-year-old defender. He had declined the Montreal Canadiens' most recent contract offer after the Canadiens let him become a free agent in June. So the 24-year-old had no contract, didn't want to play for the Canadiens after they offered him a deal that he didn't like, basically was going unsigned for what looked like this season. With having no contract in North America, Modo jumped at the opportunity. The catch in all of this is that Modo doesn't have the money to sign Norlander. At that time, they legitimately were on a budget squeeze hard. They could not afford to sign this guy.
Unfortunately, a lot of European teams are having a lot of money problems right now.
That's when they did something rather incredible. They asked their fans to pay for Norlander to play for them this season. Let me repeat that. Modo asked their fans to pay for a player to play for the team. The team launched a campaign on its website and social media channels encouraging fans to help reach a target of 1 million Swedish krona. It's about $130,000 Canadian to help Modo sign Norlander.
Mm-hmm.
Again, he's from that town. He grew up playing for Modo. Yeah. He's drafted by the Canadians. Canadians, you know, put him on in Laval for the longest time.
Yep.
He wants more opportunity. Isn't going to find it with Montreal. Became a free agent. Modo wants to bring him back home. Totally understand that.
Yep.
They don't have the money though. So now the fans have been asked to get Norlander in a Modo jersey.
Mm-hmm.
As of today, Matthias Norlander is under contract for 2 years with Modo.
Fans came in clutch.
The campaign total was reached, and additional Modo partners and sponsors stepped up to help fund the signing. According to Modo's website, quote, thanks to several partners stepping in on Wednesday, the finances could be solved even before the million was reached, unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So they had this money on Wednesday from all their partners and sponsors and still decided to go through and finish the campaign and take a little extra cash off the top there. No big deal.
Yep.
As for Norlander, what did he think of the crowdfunding to bring him home? He said, quote, I don't know that Modo was going to start a fundraiser, and when I saw it and saw how big the commitment was, I was touched. I'm very honored that so many Modoiters, I don't even know if that's a real word, Modoiters? Modoiters? I'm just going to say Modo fans,
yes.
But he used the word Modoiters. Anyway, I'm very honored that so many Modo fans have participated, says Norlander. I don't know if there's ever been a situation in hockey. And again, I understand that European hockey doesn't make the same money that NHL hockey does. I get that. But I don't know if there's ever been a situation in sports where the fans have purchased a player.
I feel like there's something in soccer.
I mean, because
like soccer has those kind of those very traditional, like club, like fan club owned.
Right, I get that.
Rules, like the 50+1 rule,
but,
like
but
in the Bundesliga.
But this is a private hockey club asking their fans to buy a player for them.
That's the thing. Is like there's certainly some example somewhere, but never in this particular situation. Like I'm sure, like one day the Green Bay Packers were like, hey. You know, our fans own the team. We're a publicly funded team. Can you guys crowdfund to pay this dude's contract? And maybe, is there even an NHL, or not an NHL team, obviously, but is there a hockey team that's like owned by fans?
I don't believe. I mean, there might be in like the lowest of low levels, but
yeah.
I don't believe that I've ever heard of one.
Like there are,
but there has to be like a board of directors that still, you know, approves everything, right?
Yeah, it's like how it's like how.
But it's like you said though. It's like it would be like when the Bombers were owned by like the public, where you could buy into.
Yeah,
and it's like us going. It's like the fans going out to recruit a quarterback. It just doesn't happen that way.
I think I have an example of something like that.
You got like. Like a minute to figure this out, but
you can own a piece of Manchester United because it's a publicly traded company.
Okay, but that's owning a piece of. That's not actually paying for their. But that's a share in a publicly traded company.
Yes, but
this is your fans giving you money to buy a player.
Yeah.
This isn't them using the money to, I don't know, redo the dressing room or repave the parking lot outside. This is specifically money to go buy a player.
Yeah, to get a contract. Which is wild to me.
I've never heard of that before, so kind of a cool thing there.
I mean,
kind of interesting.
It's better than the team like financially going under.
Well, and that's what they said, like, just to keep everything sort of, you know, financially viable, they need the money to make sure this happens. And I go,
yep.
What? If you can't afford them, you can't afford them.
Yeah,
period.
That's working on like a shoestring budgets.
Okay, anyway, that's that. Jay, we gotta get out of here right away. Free Range Radio, Skippy coming up next here on the station. Anything you want to say before we get out of here? Because legitimately, we are almost out of time.
Just you know, thoughts are with the Gaudreau family at this time, and hopefully, he will get some justice. And
that won't happen for a while.
Yes,
but
you know. Our thoughts are with you, and hope all the best.
For everybody who's starting hockey coming up this week, a lot of teams already underway, a lot of preseason hockey being played. Be careful out there. Obviously, give it your all this year. Do your best. Obviously, with the Gaudreaus, I want to send our best thoughts out to them as well. But Hockey is back in full swing. I want to thank everybody for tuning in for 12 seasons of the Hockey Show as well. Woo! This is the final show of season 12. Next week is lucky number 13, folks. We'll be back next week to start season 13.
Oh, God, what lucky things are going to happen in season 13.
Thanks for all of your support and everything you do here for the show and the station. Can't do it without you guys, so enjoy your weeks. We'll talk to you next week here on the Hockey Show on 101.5 UMFM.
Was offside, wasn't it? He'll be crying himself to sleep tonight on his huge pillow.
Dry those tears and get set for more great programming here on 101.5 CJUM FM in Winnipeg.
Good night, Dad.
Bye, Mr. McKenzie.
Fine, go. You've stayed your hour.